Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm happy to be in the world famous Fields Institute and to participate in the workshop with such distinguished people. I'll discuss entanglement today. So entanglement describes relation between two quantum parties, A and B. If the wave function of two parties, A and B, does not factorize in the product, then those two parties are entangled. That's the definition of entanglement. So meaning that if the wave function is equal to the sum of several terms, each of them factorize, then there is entanglement between A and B. N, of course, has to be greater than 1. That's entanglement between two parties. It is a resource for quantum information processing and quantum computation. I will mention this a little bit more in the end, but by now, I want to discuss measures of entanglement. So I have this qualitative, intuitive understanding that's what this means, entanglement. But how I measure this? What's the measure? This integer number, N, is not a good number of is not a good measure of entanglement, because some of the terms here can be very, very small and other are large, so N is a little bit naive. So a good measure of entanglement was introduced by Bennett, Bernstein, Popescu, and Schumacher in 96. It's entropy of a subsystem. So how I define this formally? I take the density matrix of this binary system, bipartite, A and B together, and trace away B degrees of freedom. I get density metric of a subsystem A. And then I calculate von Neumann entropy of subsystem A. That's a measure of entanglement between A and B. It's symmetric. So I could have traced out A degrees of freedom and calculate the entropy of the B degree will be the same number. It is as long as A and B together is in the pure state. It can be proven. It's not that obvious. It's several lines of the proof. But, I mean, that's the theorem. There is other measures of entanglement. Sometimes people use a trace of some power of the density metric. This is related to those generalized entropies of Tsalis and Rainier. I will mention it briefly later. So how I apply this idea to dynamical systems? Let's pick up an example of the XXX model. So this is one-dimensional spin chains. In each latest side, I have spin 1/2, so meaning that I have three Pauli matrices, sigma X, sigma Y, and sigma Z. This is standard 2x2 matrices. And this is Hamiltonian, which describes interaction. Only nearest neighbors interact, XX plus YY plus transversal magnetic field, Z. This magnetic field has some critical value if magnetic field is greater than critical value, which I think is 2 in this units, then the ground state becomes ferromagnetic. And if magnetic field is weaker than 2, smaller than 2, then ground state has anti-ferromagnetic flavor. At zero magnetic field, that's exactly anti-ferromagnetic. Ferromagnetic, well, if magnetic field is stronger, then magnetic field will fix which one of these two you have to choose. If you just enforce ferromagnetism by strong magnetic field, it will be unique, just aligned against direction of the magnetic field. Well, this Hamiltonian was diagonalized a long time ago by Lipschitz and Matisse. So we want to develop a somewhat, a little bit artificial point of view to the ground state of this model. We want to represent it somewhat artificially, the bipartite system. We shall pick up a block of X neighboring spins and announce this as a subsystem A, and the rest of the ground state is subsystem B. So what we want to do right now, we want to calculate entropy of a block of spins of the size X, and then to study how it scales with the size of the block. And there will be some universality features of this scaling. That's the reason might be interesting to this workshop, because something's related to universality. Okay, but before I do that, I want to write down the density matrix of this block of X spins. It's in the next transparency. In the next transparency, I will write down this density matrix in terms of Pauli matrices. In each ledger site, I have 4 different Pauli matrices if I include identical matrix, plus 3 standard Pauli matrices. And then this subindex A runs through 4 values, and I will use this next transparency for explicit representation of density matrix of this block of spin. Well, unfortunately, I changed notation here. Instead of X, I use L. L is equal to X, so this is the size of the block of the spin. So density matrix is equal to the sum. And here is the product of Pauli matrices. This is tensor product, of course. Different Pauli matrices in different lattice sites should be multiplied tensorially. So this is matrix part, and coefficients consist of correlation functions. I take ground state, take the product along this block of spins from 1 to L. L is the size of the block of spin of the same Pauli matrices, and then I sum up with respect to all different choices of this subindex A. So I have 4 raised to the power x terms here, 4 pi raised to the power l terms. So that can be proven. It's not evident immediately, but can be proven starting from the definition of the density matrix of subsystem, which I present in the first transparency. So this is a representation, but it conveys some ideas to me, because it shows to me that correlation function has some, that density matrix has something to do with correlation functions. Correlation functions in the model was well studied for a long time. My colleague McCoy and Baru and others from Stony Brook calculated this correlation function a long time ago, 30 years ago. So then known, but of course I had to sum them up. And some kind of asymptotics for correlation functions is not good enough. I need some kind of good representation for correlation function, because I had to sum all of this up. I can decompose matrix, then I have to diagonalize it, and then I will be able to calculate von Neumann entropy. It's a long way to go. But my favorite approach to evaluation of correlation functions is determinant representations. I wrote like a big book, like 500 pages about determinant representation for correlation functions. So let's use this determinant representation for correlation function in this case. It can be done. And I'm skipping between this line and this. This is like 20 pages of calculations skipped. But I can use determinant representations. But, of course, after this, I have to go all the way to calculate density matrix and entropy. And this is the final result, the determinant representation for entropy of a subsystem, entropy of those block of spins of the size S. So it's equal to the integral with respect to some auxiliary variable lambda. Integral goes around the unit segment, unit interval on the complex lambda plane. That's an integration contour. E is E is a very distinguished function. This is Boltzmann entropy or Shannon entropy. This is something which is very well known in probability theory and thermodynamics. And here I write a little bit fancy differential of the log of the determinant. So this is determinant of a Toeplitz matrix. So D is the determinant of the Toeplitz matrix. I have identical matrix multiplied by lambda, integration variable, plus some G, which is the matrix whose matrix elements depend only on the difference between L and K, which are the number of the row and the number of the column. It's a little bit out of the focus. Theta is integration variable, and G is called generating functional. Well, generating function here happens to be piecewise constant. So the generating function is equal to minus 1 within Fermi sphere. Fermi sphere is equal to arc cosine of the magnitude of magnetic field divided by 2. So it's equal to minus 1 within Fermi sphere and equal to plus 1 outside. eventually, what I want to do, I want to calculate, and the size of the block of spin, X or L, is the size of this matrix, So I want to study asymptotics of a large block of spin. I want to study asymptotics of this determinant where the size of the matrix is very large. Well, this is a very well studied problem in mathematics. People studied the determinants of Toeplitz matrix of very large size. Of course, it would be much easier for me. My life would essentially simplify if this would be smooth function. If this is smooth function, then I know how to calculate asymptotic. This is a Segur theorem and was studied a long time ago. But it does have discontinuity. Well, it complicates my life, but it was studied in the literature by Fischer and Hartwig, and Fischer and Hartwig discovered the formula how to calculate asymptotics of determinants for the case of singular generating functions in general, which also are applicable to the case of discontinuous.
Before you go on, I just want to understand the
formula
of the
last line. This one?
Well, the one
upper?
Yeah. So what's SA and how is it related to rho A?
Well, SA is von Neumann entropy of rho A.
Okay.
So S is minus trace rho log rho. And the rho is large matrix. The size is 2 raised to the power x. Yes, A is a block of spins of the size x, or L. Right now, I'm sorry, I confused this. No. The lattice is supposed to be infinite.
Okay.
lattice is strictly infinite. But within infinite lattice, I pick up a block of X spin, which is finite for a while. Eventually, it will go to infinity. But of course, it is actually double scaling limit, because what I have in mind that later the size of the block will be much larger than one, but still will be much smaller than the total size of the lattice. This is kind of standard thinking theoretical physics, double scaling limit. So I'm a little bit hiding this, but difficult to cheat you. The size of the matrix eventually will go to infinity, and then I will calculate explicitly these asymptotics. Asymptotics will depend on the parameters of the Hamiltonian, which is H is only one dynamical. But later, if I will have time, then we shall discuss other Hamiltonians, with more parameters. This is just introduction example, at least what I assume. Well, the answer to the question is yes. Maybe I said too many words, you know. The answer to the question is yes. Or we. No. Well, I have a parameter, magnetic field. It helped me to tune from ferromagnetic to anti-ferromagnetic. At zero magnetic field, it's anti-ferromagnetic. Then I develop some magnetization in the ground state. At the critical magnetic field, it will turn into ferromagnetic. So H is like a handle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. This one?
Yeah.
Well, so you know what I did? Remember, S is phononomy entropy of this rho.
Right.
So this is the definition. But then within this definition, I'm welcome to do the calculations. And there is a lot of calculations to be done. And I like skip like 40 pages of calculation and wrote the result. Yeah, but I have a reprint. I can give you a reprint. Yeah, what do you want? Yes. See, density symmetric has a coefficient, which is correlation function pretty much. What is correlation function? Correlation function is an average with respect to the ground state of some product of some local sigma matrices. This is like a little bit too general mathematical definition for correlation function. Physicists will say that physicists like only two Pauli matrices in here. But in general, from a mathematical point of view, I can fill the whole interval. And from a mathematical point of view, just a correlation function is a matrix element of local operator with respect to average with respect to the ground state. And I have to calculate this. So I use Bedanzas to calculate this. But I have to do this smartly, because later I still have to sum up. So I should have some closed expression for density symmetric. It's not the end of the story yet. Then I have to diagonalize it to find eigenvalues. And then I have to sum up eigenvalue, log eigenvalue with respect to all of this. And then I managed to do this because my determinant representation are very, very smart. So I can kind of manage to put summation inside the determinant representation. And that's what came out of all of these calculations. So it's like sophisticated calculation, at least. Yes, Bedanzas. Bedanzas is simple here because XX, this is kind of free fermionic. So it's not as bad. Well, scattering matrix is equal to minus one. So scattering matrix does not depend on momentum. So it's pretty much free fermionic. But, you know, I don't want you to think that this is trivial calculation. I still done pretty good job. Right. Well, of course, I have to write a Jordan-Wigner transformation. I have to represent power matrix in terms of fermions. So fermions somewhere inside of there, but this is not correlation function of free fermions because of this exponential tail. All right. So anyway, once again, entropy of a subsystem. This is Boltzmann entropy or Shannon entropy, and then determinant of this Toeplitz matrix. And I can write the whole matrix in terms of Fourier transform of some generating functional. Well, the difference from the previous transparency, I just included identical matrix in the definition. So my generating function is lambda, integration variable minus one, or lambda plus one. Well, this is perfect setup for Fischer-Hartwig formula. Fischer-Hartwig formula just directly works for this discontinuity case. And then, of course, still after, even after I use Fisher-Hartwig and write everything in terms of Barnes gamma function, I still have to do this integration. So after Fisher-Hartwig, I still have to do effort. And then, but eventually there is an answer. So the answer asymptotic. Well, and then, you know, for the average size of the block of spins, this is the answer. This determinant, this integral is the answer. There is nothing better. But there is a certain simplification for asymptotics. Well, larger block of spins is very large or very small. And then I can use some elementary functions for representation of this entropy. What came out of all this study that actually asymptotics depend on this one universal parameter. So size of the block multiplied by the square root of 1 minus, this is the ratio of the magnetic field to the critical magnetic field, and somehow came out. So this is nice. Also has something to do with the renormalization group. Okay, so when this parameter is small, that means that I have a limited size of the block plus magnetic field is close to critical, means that I have strong magnetization, which is a little bit below 1. So state is close to ferromagnetic, but not yet quite there. So when this L is small, then entropy vanishes. Entropy vanishes proportional to this L log L, L log L. So for small size, it should vanish, of course. For large in L, for large value of this parameter, entropy of the block increases logarithmically. It's 1/3 log of this size of the block plus some constants, like this is some fancy constants, which maybe Dirk even will like this constant. Looks like a transcendental number to me. So, and then plus a higher correction, 1 divided by L, 1 divided by L square, and so on, the whole Taylor series in inverse powers of L. So this is just leading term of asymptotics plus correction plus further corrections. Yes, yes, this is entropy. So I use Fisher-Hartwig for the determinant. After this, I integrate it, and that's the answer. So this is another 40 pages of calculations. Well, maybe 35. Yeah. No, no, it's not in the book. It's in the paper. It's completely out of the book. It's completely out of the book. Well, I kind of wrote another book since the time about Hubbard model. It's partially Hubbard example included in the Hubbard book. Well, okay, so by now, if I still have any time, what I want to do, I want to discuss, well, this leading term, 1/3 log L, is universal. Universal meaning that it works for gapless models when there is no gap in the spectrum. And the spectrum of dispersion curve is linear, meaning for low-lying excitation, energy depends on the momentum of the linear. So if this is true, then conformal field theory works. And then this is actually, if I will have time, I will derive conformal field theory derivation of this leading term. Leading term can be understood by means of conformal field theory, so it's pretty universal. On the other hand, also if I have time, then I will explain how it works for other models, other spin chains, Bose-Gatz with delta interaction, Hubbard model, and things like that. But first remark which I want to do is the following. Well, sometimes in the literature, people discuss generalized entropy, Rainey entropy and Salis entropy. Both, all of these generalized are based, well, for Neumann entropy, I calculate trace of rho log rho. Instead of this, I can calculate trace of some power of density matrix. And then my technique also helped me to calculate this trace of the power of the density matrix within the same technique. So I just show the result of evaluation of the trace of the power of density matrix, which also provides this generalized entropy.
So
consider
now H less than H.
H less than H critical.
So
well, physicists will not call this antiferromagnetic. The formal definition of antiferromagnetic strictly when magnetic field is strictly equal to zero. Magnetization, the average of sigma z or any other power matrix is equal to zero. Small h means that there is some average value of sigma z, but which is smaller than 1. In ferromagnetic case, it's equal to 1. So it's kind of intermediate state, or ferromagnetic state with a taste of anti-ferromagnetic. It's zero. Entropy is zero because nothing fluctuates. It's freezing, so it's a 1 state. So there is just zero. Exactly true. Okay. Yeah, I have this square, see, log of the square root of the singularity. There is singularity, the Poisson phase transition. I want to elaborate on this I still have like 35 minutes, so I was planning to elaborate on this. My idea was to get other spin chain with more parameters, then there will be more phase transitions, and then I will be able to be more fancy with these phase transitions. Okay, so I calculate the power of density metrics, then asymptotics, I can calculate the same asymptotics, large size of the block. It still scales logarithmically, but the coefficient in front of the log by now depends on also on the alpha, on this power. If alpha goes to 1, this is the case when Rainy goes back to von Neumann. This is turned into 1/3 and reproduced back again. So let me elaborate a little bit more on the generalized entropies. Due to some reason, just popular subject in the literature. Literature is multiple on the subject. Right now, it's really, really popular subject, and a lot of people are writing papers about von Neumann entropy and also generalized entropy. So this is definition of Rainier entropy. Rainier entropy depends on the parameter alpha, which is fixed. It's just some number smaller than 1. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go to infinity. It's just fixed number, like 1/2, 1/3, something like that, alpha. So log trace. Trace is taken with respect to all of the spins within the block of rho alpha, and this is necessary for normalization, and that's the answer which we got for asymptotics. This is a double scaling limit, central charge, which is equal to 1 in our case, divided by 6 log, and this is the coefficient. This is something else which is called Thales entropy, which is a trace of the power of density matrix minus 1, but Thales is just function, simple function of Rainier, so they're related to one another. There's three different purposes. First, we can do this. You know, as you yesterday told me that you published the paper on something which you can do that. That you said that you solved that ansatz because of this. Second of all, popular subject in the literature. People calculate this, and I also want to get citation, so I also calculate this. And third interest, I just, you know, postponed this last one because I don't want to be killed before I said the first two remarks. That I think that might be this Rainier entropy might be useful for some physics sometimes, because in statistical mechanics there are still some unclarified questions like turbulence or thermodynamics of astrophysics or some unresolved questions. So maybe study of this generalized entropy will help us. Also, there is a mathematical reason to study this, because see, if you know von Neumann entropy of the state, doesn't fix the state uniquely in any way. But if you know Rainier entropy, arbitrary value of alpha, it will fix the state, because it's like Fourier transform, right? If you know it at any value of alpha. So mathematically, this is the way to fix the state. So it's not as bad. Yes?
I think none of those stand up.
Okay.
And as you say, it's
sort of
fashionable because it's a
reasonable
calculation this way. I mean, I like the point you make about the
Rainier
entropy as a function of alpha.
Yes, yes. Yes, I completely agree to that, and I will take this away before I get burned any further. So let's come back to Rainier entropy. Let's come back to von Neumann entropy. So forget about this. So I stated this leading logarithmic term is universal. So I want to give a derivation of this, universality style. It's of course a draft of a derivation. It's kind of the idea. But nevertheless, it has some universality taste. So I want to present it in here. So first of all, of course, you remember the definition of the central charge. Central charge either can be defined formally in the frame of conformal field theory, the correlation function of this T is a trace of energy momentum tensor. Z is a complex variable, and it's equal to central charge divided by the fourth power of Z. This is formal definition of the central charge within conformal field theory. From the point of view of beta ansatz and applications to the models which I have in mind, there is a simpler, less rigorous definition of the central charge. I can think about central charge as number of gapless degrees of freedom, like in XXX, central charge is equal to 1 because I have 1 degree of freedom. In, I don't know, Hubbard model, below Hopfering is equal to 2 because I have 2 degrees of freedom. So this naive definition still works. Also, in the frame of the central charge, I can develop thermodynamics. I can describe thermodynamics, finite temperature, using conformal field theory approach, which was developed here in Canada by Affleck, Jan Affleck, distinguished Canadian physicist. He calculated specific heat In terms of the central charge, so it's a linear function of temperature divided by V, Fermi velocity. Of course, this is only low temperature limit of the. Okay, so this specific heat can be integrated using all kind of equations of thermodynamics from the textbooks. So among other things, I can calculate specific entropy at low temperature. Specific entropy actually is equal to the same thing. Pi, temperature, central charge, 3V. Well, I'm sorry for being disordered with my transparency. This is universal derivation, so it will work for all kinds of spin chains, including Bose-Gas, but Bose-Gas will just disappear. So let me continue with my derivation. So right now we want to concentrate our attention to this formula for specific entropy at low temperatures. Okay, so I know specific entropy at low temperature. So at small positive temperature, I can calculate entropy of the block of spins, right? Since I know specific means I know the entropy of 1 meter of the gas of the spin chain. Now the entropy of the block of spin for positive temperature is this specific entropy from the previous transparency multiplied by the size of the block. So for positive temperature, entropy is actually a linear function of x, not logarithmic. And this is kind of trivially follows from the second and third laws of thermodynamics. It was known, you know, long time ago. So, but by now I want to use this in order to derive my logarithmic formula at zero temperature. So at zero temperature, according to this formula, it vanishes, because at zero temperature, F vanishes. But only linear part is vanishes. Logarithmic will stay. So let's see how it goes, how I can obtain my logarithmic from the laws of thermodynamics, second and third laws of thermodynamics. So let's see. For positive temperature, entropy of block of spins is linear function of x multiplied by temperature. At zero temperature, it vanishes along to this. But this is some function of x. Well, I told you that it's logarithmic, but by now we pretend that we don't know this. So this is some function which increases with x weaker than linear, so it's a sublinear increase. So at zero temperature, this is unknown function x. And right now, I want to, what I can do conformal mapping from zero temperature to finite temperature. So if I do conformal mapping, then in terms of this f of x, I can express express entropy at finite temperature. If this is the entropy of a block of spins at zero temperature, at finite temperature, f of x will be function of the different arguments. Function of V, Fermi velocity divided by pi t sine hyperbolic of this. This is standard conformal mapping. So I can re-express this thing in terms of F. Of course, I'm talking about large size, large block of spin. So X go to infinity. So in this sign, I should drop one exponent and leave only other exponents. So if I do that, then entropy of a block of spins at positive temperature will be given by this formula. I just dropped one of the exponents from the sign, and S of x is function of the exponent. On the other hand, I already know the answer for S of x. It's linear function of x. But this equality defined the function for me, right? The function of exponent is equal to its argument. What kind of function is this? This is a logarithm, right? In order to get x, I had to calculate logarithm of exponent. So this is the derivation. This is the derivation of the leading term of this scaling of entropy of zero temperature. So I just calculated out of, this is universality style derivation of this leading term. At zero temperature, this is entanglement entropy. This is entropy of a block of spins at zero temperature, meaning that entropy of the whole ground state is zero, because at zero temperature, it's unique. But entropy of a subsystem is non-zero. It is entanglement entropy. It is entanglement entropy. T, well, you know, T I used during derivation. The logarithmic formula for, okay, y is equal to x. This is still the size of the blocks. I used three letters, x, y, and l. This formula applicable only at zero temperature. If I have a smaller temperature, I can use intermediate formula, what came out of my derivation, that at small temperatures, I can use this formula, central charge divided by 3 log of this. So at zero temperature, it will turn into the logarithmic formula, but for larger temperature, it will turn into the second law of thermodynamics, which is known for a long, long time 18th century maybe. So this is a good intermediate formula from zero temperature. This is matching formula from zero temperature to positive temperature. So at zero temperature, entropy is quantum mechanical. This is it's because of the quantum mechanical fluctuation, that's entanglement entropy. At positive temperature, it's not quantum mechanical. It's like thermal fluctuation. Quantum mechanical fluctuation is somewhere down. So this is the entropy of the block of spins of size of L. It's, this formula, of course, works nicely for small temperatures. For larger temperatures, the lattice will become essential. All the details of my Hamiltonian will be important.
This is basically a scaling formula. I had yesterday
just for this is exactly true. I completely agree to that. Okay, so this is just universality for part to match the subject of the conference. Okay, so it's applicable. So let's look at some applications. So it's pretty universal. So it is this formula applicable not only to XXX. It's applicable to full-scale XXZ model. Of course, as long as delta, this anisotropy is smaller than 1. I mean, I should look into critical phase of XXX when there is no gap in the spectrum. Then dispersion curve is linear. And then so 1/3 log X also work as a good form of entropy of type subsystem in the XXX, which will be more difficult to go for me with determinants because it's not three fermionic, but these conformal arguments show that it's also applicable to XXX. Okay, so which other interesting models can be described by this formula? So this central charge divided by 3 log X gives describe the entropy of a large block of large spins for wide class of models. So actually, I should make reference. This formula, C3 log X, first was discovered by Horsney, Larson, and Wilczek in 94. They were studying black holes. They were studying this, you know, entropy of a black hole, Hawking formula. Toft also was involved in this. But since they also use conformal field theory, the formula came out the same, and the conformal field theory can be used to bridge between spin chains and black holes. But Forman was first published in 94, a nuclear physics publication. All right. So there is something else. I can calculate the dependence of entropy block of spins on the value of spin. Well, how I do that is the following. I like integrable models, exactly solvable models. And then there is integrable models of interacting spins at any value of spins. For example, well, we started from the we can start from the XXX. XXX was discovered by Heisenberg in 29. It describes spin 1/2, and this is scalar product of two spin 1/2 and the neighboring spins. That's more or less what we discussed. XXX is a special case of XXZ. That's what we discussed. Second, it's a quantum model, spin 1/2. It's actually as quantum as it gets. When spin increases, it becomes more quasi-classical. Spin goes to infinity, it turns into classical. Okay, but I can increase the spin. If I have spin 1, then this is integrable models of interacting spin 1. This is something which is called Tahta-Jahn-Babu-Jahn model. It's also solvable by beta and zat. And Jan Affleck calculated central charge of this. Central charge of this. And then there is formulas for exactly solvable models of spins of high value interacting. Also only nearest neighbors interact. And the Hamiltonian is still nearest neighbor interaction, but Hamiltonian is more complicated polynomial on this scalar product. It's not. No. This is 3x3 matrix, spin 1. And for high spin, the size of the matrix increases. This is one reason, and the other reason, because spin is not equal to 1/2. In spin 1/2, this is equal to 1, because square of Pauli matrix is equal to 1. But with spin 1, it makes sense. Of course, minus 1 is for integrability purposes. But there is further generalization of this to even higher spins. No. This is integral for spin 1/2. This is integral for spin 1. And there exist other generalization for high spin, also integral, but they look different. More sophisticated polynomial. The polynomial is can be written as some logarithmic derivative of gamma function. It's published in the literature. I don't know. I read this from Fadeev. Yes? Young-Baxter equation. This means that I have beta and zat, Young-Baxter equation, ground state, and all things related to beta and zat. Polynomials for high spins are sophisticated and complicated. That's the reason why I didn't publish them, but they're published in the literature. I personally read this from some Fadi's publications 20 years ago, but then it was forgotten, now it's rediscovered and things like that. But there is a certain simplification because of Canadian contribution. Jan Afflik calculated the central charge of all of it. I mean, all of them are gapless. All of them are gapless, and the dispersion curve is linear, and central charge is equal to 3s divided by s plus 1. S is the value of spin. And then I know, so this helps me to calculate entropy of block of spin for arbitrary spin. So that's the spin dependence. So this coefficient was equal to 1/3 for spin 1/2, and then it gradually, very weakly, very slowly approaches 1 when in the quasi-classical limit. So this is just an application of this formula, but it's also people interested in the literature on this, the dependence of entropy on the value of spin. Well, okay. So now there's another example of the model to which I can apply this argument, Hubbert model. Hubbert model describes electrons with a spin 1/2 on one-dimensional lattice. Well, this is pretty standard model, was solved by Lieb and Wu long time ago. But here, in Hubbert model, I have different phases. So entropy, so what I will calculate, the entropy of electrons sitting in some space interval. I will fix the size of the space interval, will kind of catch mentally the electrons sitting on this space interval and calculate their entropy. So the entropy depends on the phase of the Hubbert model. In the repulsive case, means coupling constant positive, and below half ceiling. Below half ceiling means that on average I have less than one electron per one lattice size. There is two gapless degrees of freedom, so entropy of the electron sitting with the space interval 0x is 2/3 log x. But exactly at half ceiling, gap degree of freedom, they develop charge degrees of freedom, they develop gap. So I have only one gapless degree of freedom, so entropy of electron sitting with the space interval x is 1/3 log x. And then I can also calculate entropy for attractive Hubbert. Anyway, this general universal conformal formula applicable for Hubbert and should be worked appropriately. Okay, this is yet another. Now, I want to talk about limitations of applicability of this formula. So it's formula universal, but it's not super duper universal, meaning that there is some gapless models where dispersion curve is quadratic. Like, for example, quantum mechanics, right? I can describe quantum mechanics like non-relativistic, take free Schrodinger equation. Cannot describe a conformal field theory, right? It's gapless, but it has nothing to do with conformal field theory. Or I can pick up ferromagnetic state. I can pick up ferromagnetic state, and I can calculate entropy of a subsystem. I explain in a moment how. And then it's still scaling logarithmically with a different coefficient, which is 1/2 instead of 1/3. So I just want to switch on the light and let me explain how to do this in the ferromagnetic case. Let me have, for starters, to give you an idea, let's have two spin 1/2s. And if they come together, then I can form a spin 1 out of two spin 1/2s, right? Spin 1, if as the magnetic number equal to 1, then this is a spin 1 state being written in terms of 2 spin 1/2. If SZ is equal to 0, then this is still spin 1. This is a state. And if SZ is equal to minus 1, then this is a state. See, this is something interesting to hear, because I see that entropy depends on the magnetic number, right? So entropy is different for the different components of this multiplet. Here, I don't have any entanglement. Entropy of a subsystem is zero. Here, I do have entanglement. Entropy is actually equal to one. It's maximally entangled state. This is Bell state, Einstein-Podolsky. And here, entropy is equal to zero again. So it is incorrect to say that entropy of a subsystem depends only on the value of spin. It does depend on the magnetic number, on SZ. So it's not that invariant as people in quantum field theory likes. So I can use this in order to define ferromagnetic case. So what I do is the following. So let's pick up, this is XXX ferromagnetic with a minus sign. So of course one of the ferromagnetic states is spin, all spin up. if I have all spin up, there is no entropy in any subsystem. Entropy is equal to zero. So this is not a good idea. But of course, if I do not have any magnetic field, then ferromagnetic state is highly degenerate because all spins are parallel to which direction they are looking, up, down, to the side. So I take these all spins up and apply spin lowering operator. Sigma minus is this standard matrix, something like 0, 0, 1, 0. So this is spin lowering of the third component of spin. So S minus, I raise it in some power M, which will be high power. Actually, the power will be proportional to the size of the block of spin and go to infinity together proportional to the size of the spin. This there is entanglement in here. There is entanglement in here. It's entanglement. Entropy of subsystem is not zero. Well, because S minus does not factorize in an operator which depends only on X degrees of freedom, on degrees of freedom of the block of spin and outside. So this is entangled state. It's strange, but my example shows that entropy does depend on the third component of spin. So by now we know. So how I can calculate entropy of a subsystem in this situation when M increases and S increases? Well, it was done by Salerno and Popkov, and its scale is still logarithmic, but coefficient is 1/2 instead of 1/3. So it cannot be described by conformal field theory. This is something else, not conformal. And well, this is interesting. This is interesting to me. Also, this has a yet further application to something, to some other subject of condensed matter and statistical mechanics, to strongly correlated electrons. In the frame of strongly correlated electrons, some time ago, some mechanism was discussed in the literature. It's called eta pairing. This is operation of creation of electrons, the same operators which I used to write down Hubbard Hamiltonian. This is operator of creation of electrons, site number J spin down, site number J spin up, same site, spin up, spin down, minus one. So this is some eta pairing. So eta pairing states the wave function is empty site, empty meaning the one which is annihilated by C, multiplied by eta raised to the power M. From mathematical point of view, the problem of calculation entropy of this subsystem identical to this. Mathematically, it's the same. Spin 1/2, SU2 algebra. But different people calculated this example. Vedral, Lloyd, Fenn, the answer is the same, of course. And as I said, by now, this entanglement entropy is a very popular subject. So many, many, many people come, and they never make reference to one another. These guys calculate the same stuff, the name, never make reference. Even these guys calculate the same thing, never refer to one another. A little bit like a revolutionary situation with a complete disorder, you know. Okay, I still have 15 minutes. Okay, so by now, we discussed gapless degrees of freedom. So if there is no gap, entropy of such system increases logarithmically, coefficient sometimes can be described by conformal field theory, sometimes not. But what happens with the gapped degrees of freedom? Well, I have some spin chain, XY spin chain. This gamma is a parameter, H is still magnetic field, gamma is anisotropy parameter. So there is a gap. If gamma non equal to zero, then there is a gap in the spectrum. And then entropy saturates. Entropy of large block of spins, for large block of spin, go to a constant. There is a limit. There is a limit which is non-zero, and it doesn't increase boundlessly. There is a certain limit. So physicists think about this in the following way. They say that large block of spins, the system is pure inside and pure outside. So all the entropy concentrated on the boundaries. So when boundaries is far away from one another, it's like piece contribution to the entropy from one end of the boundary from another. And that's it. So that's a physical picture of explanation why entropy saturates or has some limit in my double scaling limit. So in here, the model, XY model, was solved long time ago. And there is three phases in this model depending on the value or the relative value between magnetic field and anisotropy. There are three different phases. So we do the same thing which we've done already. So we consider the ground state on the infinite lattice. Among infinitely many spins, we pick up a block of spins of the size x. And then we calculate von Neumann entropy of this block of spin when x increases. Then entropy saturates, it has a limit, and the limit can be expressed in terms of the elliptic integral of the first kind. Next transparency, I will have a bunch of formulas in terms of this elliptic integral. Well, technically, I will use determinant representation. How to calculate this? I use determinant representation again, but by now, technically, it's more sophisticated. It's block toplets matrix. So if I just map this to Riemann-Hilbert problem, this will be Riemann-Hilbert problem 4x4, then I asymptotically reduce this to 2x2, then we solve this in terms of elliptic functions. Of course, it's the coauthor because, you know, he's a master. Well, so this limiting entropy, so entropy of a large block of spins has a limit, that's a limit. And then depending on the phase, there's different expression for this entropy. So this modulus of elliptic function, K, expressed in terms of physical parameters. K is the function of magnetic field and gamma, and then I'm supposed to calculate those elliptic integral of the first kind, and then we calculated this is limiting formula for the entropy of large block of spins in the infinite chain, so it's double scaling limit. That's the number. Well, explicit formulas are interesting because this is elliptic integrals. From the physics point of view, what's interesting is that all of this expression has a singularity exactly at the points of phase transitions. So let me show the singularities of this entropy of a subsystem at the points of phase transitions. So when magnetic field approaches critical value, this is ferromagnetic state, then this entropy of a subsystem develop singularity log of the deviation of magnetic field from the critical value will just come out of our elliptic formulas. Another case is isotropic limit. When gamma goes to zero, then I come back to XXX. In XXX, I know that entropy should increase logarithmically, so this formula should have some kind of singularity. If it does have singularity, it's minus third log gamma goes to zero, and this is nice. This is nice, which shows that entropy of a subsystem is actually a physical object. It does have singularity at the phase transition. So it is interesting not only from the point of information theory, quantum information processing, quantum computing. It's interesting for physics. That's an important characteristic of the ground state for physics. So this is a new object. It's not correlation function. It's not scattering matrix. But still, it's characterized the ground state. Okay, so I still have 10 minutes, right? Well, I don't know. I want to discuss some other gapped spin models, just other examples. I don't know, maybe we're jumping too fast. There is another example of gap model, something which is called valence bond solid, or AKLT, which stands for Aflic, Kennedy, Lieben, Tasaki. It is extended subject, but in the simplest case, we can consider one-dimensional lattice, and spin one sitting in each lattice side, spin one. So that's the density of the Hamiltonian. See, it's like a Takhtajan Babajan, but instead of minus one, we wrote 1/3 here. It makes all the difference in the world. Now we have a gap. The Takhtajan Babajan was gapless, and conformance field theory works here. There is no gap. There is a big gap here, and entropy saturates. And just forget about 1/3 log x. It just has a limit. Oh, it's not integrable in the sense of Young-Baxter, but it's there's plus and minus, meaning that I do know explicit expression of the ground state wave function in any dimension, on any lattice, on any graph. But I do not know excited. By partite. Right. Should be careful in the presence of the chairman of the International Association of Mathematical Physics. So this density of Hamiltonian, it's better to write this in this form. Instead of this, I better write this. Because you know what it is? This is the following. I take two spin ones together, and they can form spin two or spin zero. So this is actually a projector on the space with spin two. So this is the projector on the state with the spin two of two spins ones. So that's the reason why it's so simple. So meaning that in the ground state, I will never have two spins parallel to one another. All of them should be anti-parallel. So spin two should never appear in the ground state. And that's the reason why I will be able, or Lieb, Kennedy, and Tasaki was able to write the explicit formula for the ground state. Okay. So once again, this is the same model with the same interpretation. Maybe I should mention that this model, together with many other one-dimensional models, can be experimentally realizing optical lattices in quantum optics, these two standing electromagnetic waves, lasers shining to one another. They just go, do all kinds of miracles. They can build it up. So there is experimental realization. Together with both the gas with delta interaction, they're just building in the lab. This is a brief indication of the ground state wave function. So, I don't know, I read the high spin representation of SV2 algebra from Landau book on quantum mechanics. One of the ways to represent spin 1, I'm just explaining the nature of the ground state right now. One of the ways to represent spin 1, if I take, I can take two spin 1/2 and symmetrize it. So I will depict it as two dots, which standing for spin 1/2, and this dotted circle, which stands for symmetrization. So that's the nature of the ground state, meaning that in each lattice site I put two spin 1s, then I take one spin 1/2 from one lattice site and another spin 1/2 from the neighboring spin and make anti-symmetrization. This is anti-symmetrization. This is, you know, Bell state, Einstein, Podolsky, Rosen. But after this, I will still have some degrees of freedom hanging out. So I will make symmetrization in each lattice site. So because of symmetrization, I will have spin 1/2, but there is some kind of entanglement between two neighboring sites. I will, if I have time, I will write another representation of the same ground state in terms of quantum field theory, harmonic oscillators. This is one language to describe it. But there is another. Well, anyway, that's the nature of the ground state. And then what I'm going to do, I can pick a block of spins of the sizes, calculate, and entropy is equal to 2. This is entropy of the large block of spins in the infinite. And later we figure out why it is equal to 2. It is equal to 2 because it takes two links to cut in order to isolate the subsystem. This is a very appropriate picture which will work for high 10 minutes. Okay, I will shut up soon. Okay, so let me, you know, okay. So in this one-dimensional lattice, correlation functions are known. So in the ground state, I can take spin, A is the component of spin. It's 1, 2, 3. B is another component of spin, 1, 2, 3. And this is spin 0, spin L. So average with respect to the ground state is a correlation function, which is a very simple exponent. In terms of this correlation function, we can calculate entropy of block of L spins. So this formula is even better than what I wrote before, because here I'm not considering double scaling limit. So here I can take finite lattice, pick up finite block of spins within that finite lattice. And this is the formula 2 log in terms of this P. So this is even better formula. It's more precise. It's not limiting. It's just finite lattice, finite block of spins. And then, of course, if in the double scaling limit, only 2 will survive and the rest will die out. Well, since I'm running out of time, let me tell you that this AKLT is very, very nice. And the dynamical picture, the Hamiltonian, can be generalized to arbitrary graph. This was done by Affleck, Lieb, Kennedy, and Tasaki on arbitrary bipartite graph. And we cannot calculate the entropy of subsystem on arbitrary bipartite graph. It will include any lattice size and things like that. What we can do, we can consider both a graph or the graph with no loops. No loops. Well, Dirk will like this, right? So it's like no loops. So this is kind of simpler. And then we can calculate entropy of subsystem on this simple graph. And it will be proportional, it will be equal to the number of links which are necessary to cut in order to isolate the subsystem. In the more general, more complicated graph with the loops, we can prove the theorem that entropy of a subsystem is proportional to the area or of the domain, but we don't know the coefficients. If there is no loop, we know the coefficients. So there is some multidimensional generalization, but of course this is, and people believe that in many dimensions, in the gap situation, for the gap model, the entropy of the large area of spins proportional to the surface of that area. Well, but this is belief and some computer simulation, so it was not proven mathematically, just some theoretical physics conjecture. So in order to finalize, I still want to show two more transparencies, maybe just to wake people in the end of the lecture. So what we've done here, we consider entropy of the subsystem. Why are we interested in the entropy of the subsystem? Primary reason was because we're interested in the entanglement. So you remember my definition of entanglement, many terms, n is greater than 1. So why is this good? That's a resource for quantum computation, quantum information processing. But in general, it is clear that when two systems, A and B, are entangled between one another, I can use one subsystem to control the other, among other things. I can, if I measure subsystem A, it will change the state of B. And this is very remarkable because I can have fiber optics going from Toronto to New York and sending electromagnetic waves, which will create two entangled photons. If I measure one photon in here, in Toronto, the state of the other will change in New York. So this is like really, really important device of controlling quantum control. So that's entanglement. Entanglement is a resource for quantum computation, for quantum control. Well, and as I said, there are multiple publications. Many, many people work on this, and people from different areas, high energy, statistical mechanics, condensed matter. Some people come from quantum optics, quantum information theories, and there is some references to the subject, which is, I'm sure it's not complete, but at least there is something. That's the end.